And welcome in to the Wednesday edition of Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, brought to you by Volunteer State Bank. Real people, real solutions, right here. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rex Road and Michelle Knezovic here with you on this Wednesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Joseph, how are we doing? What's going on?
Doing awesome. Got the headphones with both ears working, so that's pretty so sweet.
That means you stole my headphones.
Yeah, basically. Don't worry, I'll wash them after the show. Don't worry.
Yeah, please do. Michelle, what's going on? How are we?
Doing good this morning. Yeah, Joe's like, oh, Robbie's not here yet. He's like, oh, let me check all these headphones, make sure I get the good ones. But no, doing good this morning. There was some good college basketball on last night. This is my chance just to incorporate it into the segment right off the bat.
Michelle Rexroad is like a sleeper agent for – I said Michelle Rexroad. Michelle Knezovic is like a sleeper agent for Joe Rexroad, getting that basketball in there. Way to go.
Yeah,
he's taught you well.
Brennan very mad last night because his Sparties lost to Illinois. What did your Cats play last night, Michelle?
Yes, we went into overtime with Mississippi State.
Oh, really? I didn't even know that.
We won, though.
Mm. Mississippi State?
At Rupp Arena. Oscar Sheepaway. 20 rebounds, 20 points. He's incredible. He should be in the conversation for player of the year.
I agree, but that's a disappointing performance. Agree?
Has anybody ever thought about boxing him out?
By the team.
You go
to overtime with them?
Ty Washington was out in their defense.
Okay, so you got excuses. All right, you came with excuses. How about Auburn, though, almost losing to Missouri last night?
Yeah.
Man.
Well, that's the classic case of you get this big emotional win a couple days before, and then that letdown comes right after.
That's right. Are you referring to something that I'm not? That's over
my head
right now.
They beat Kentucky.
Oh, Auburn beat Kentucky.
Oh,
they
right.
All, like, they,
yeah, but is that even a big win anymore? That's why. That's why I was confused. You know.
What we've learned so far today is Joe's microphone is going to be turned off by Michelle very quickly into the show today. It's good stuff.
You're going to play a lot of Sierra.
I'll be muting him. I'll be muting him.
Yes. How about Sean Payton? Just getting the New Orleans Saints $70-some-odd million into cap trouble, walking around this year after Drew Brees and looking around and saying, huh, there's Jameis Winston, there's Trevor Siemian, there's Taysom Hill. You know what? I think I'm done. I think I'm just going to call it quits for now.
Yeah.
End of an era down there in New Orleans.
It's like Nick Saban with the Dolphins. Like, you know, I'm not going to be the Alabama coach. And he's like, wait, what's the quarterback situation? I'm going to be the Alabama coach. How about that? I don't know if that's a stunner, but that's a big one. And every single Cowboys fan on the earth now is like, you know, tweeting at him, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah. Well, do we think he came to this decision? More likely that he came to this decision because Taysom Hill is going to be his starting quarterback or because Kevin James is playing him in a movie? Why do we think he did this?
I guess that's kind of like, I mean, when you get to the point in your life when Kevin James plays you in a movie, you know, like really, what else do you have to do, right? Like that's pretty much the peak. Just go sit on a beach the rest of the time, you know?
Can't wait to see that movie whenever it comes out. That'll be fun. Has it already come out? I have no idea.
Honestly, I don't know. Has anybody seen the Kurt Warner movie yet?
No.
It looks so cheesy.
Yeah. Like, I'm not totally against it, but it would probably have to just be on, you know?
Yeah.
I almost do want to go out of my way to watch the Sean Payton one because it's just so hilarious that Kevin James is playing him.
It really
Paul
is.
Paul Blart, NFL head coach.
I had a friend point this out to me the other day. Like, this will be the second movie that depicts Dick Vermeil as the head coach. You've got the, you know, the Invincible movie with Wahlberg in there from Vince Papale.
Yeah.
Vermeil's the coach there, and now we're making this movie about the Rams, too. Dick Vermeil, movie star in today's world.
Very, and you're talking about Dick Vermeil 20 years apart.
Yeah.
I'm trying to remember who played. Was it Greg Kinnear played Dick Vermeil in Invincible?
I think so. Yeah,
I think that's right. Who plays him in this?
I don't know.
Fascinating. Fascinating.
No, I do know. It's Dennis Quaid.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Interesting. That's pretty good actors playing you. Like Dick Vermeil should be kind of honored by the level of actor playing him in movies. I mean, no offense to Kevin James. You know, he's kind of funny, I guess.
You think Ben Affleck will be in that movie? Probably not.
I don't know. If they need an extra, like a tackling dummy, you know, with no lines, I think that might be a good move there.
Congratulations to Sean Payton on a good career in New Orleans. And he said he doesn't know what's next after stepping down yesterday. Do we believe that? Do we think Sean Payton's not coaching anywhere in 2022?
Well, I believe when he says, I don't know what's next. I mean, he's like, I don't know what's next. It kind of feels good. From what I saw of this press conference, it was pretty good. You know, I mean, and that's the thing. I mean, Sean Payton is a big personality, but I don't think that he did this now this is my next. I believe him, but at the same time, what you just said, no, I think he'll be somewhere. I think he's going to take his pick, you know? I think he's going to assess the lay of the land and see what opens up and probably take the best quarterback situation.
Maybe it's Jacksonville. Maybe he goes down there with Trevor.
Well, Byron Leftwich is getting that job. Is that not true?
It looks like it, yeah.
Yeah.
It does look like it.
See, I don't know. See, no. I guess I kind of feel like Sean Payton. I think he's a head coach in 23. I think he's going to be one of those 1 year, put him on TV, you know, and I'm sure he'll at least be better than Bruce Arians at that. And then, actually, Sean Payton he might be really good at that, you know.
Yeah.
Sometimes guys are like, gosh, this is kind of cool. Still make a lot of money, still around the game, don't have the pressure, the stress. But I'm sure he's going to be getting back into it. And a lot of people will want him to be their coach.
The Nashville Predators with a big win last night on the road, taking on the Seattle Kraken. They get it done 4-2 last night, Joe Rexroad. They've now won 3 games in a row. Matthias Ekholm on the board last night. Luke Kunin on the board last night. And then the usual suspects as well. Yep. Philip Forsberg and Matt Duchene get it done last night as well. The Forsberg goal, if you haven't seen it, it's literally 200 feet coast to coast picking his corner and going back to the bench. That's basically what he did.
Takes the puck behind his own net and just weaves through everybody, rips one, and thank you very much. And then, of course, Duchene, net front, power play. They just keep rolling. So that means listener and what, you?
Well, yes, listener and me and Preds picked a click last night, which also means the listeners have reestablished the lead in this competition with 11 correct answers. You are at 10. I am at 9. Michelle's at 4.
Okay. Also, Ellie Tolvanen didn't even travel, so that's just solid for me.
Yeah.
That was a tough one.
That's a toughie. Yeah. But at least that way, you couldn't be disappointed during the game. You know what I mean?
That's true.
Like, you knew you wouldn't be disappointed. Yeah. Like, you wouldn't get your hopes up. I mean, in a way, it's kind of better, you know? Think of it that way.
No, Joe. Yeah.
Let's be positive here. That's right.
What I want to know is I know the listeners call in, so they're going to speak first, but why can't we have them call in and wait their turn? Why, I mean, it's unfair. They get the first pick every time.
It's a listener-friendly competition. I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah, no, it's fine. We want them to win the prize packs. So
yeah, it's a listener-friendly competition. How about Ekholm last night? A little wraparound action. You don't see defensemen scoring wraparound goals all that much.
I mean, that's something you expect Josi to do. And that was kind of sweet. That was good. You know, you're down 2-1, second period, and you're like, are you going to mess around in this game, guys? You know, against it, like, you can't, you know, you want to minimize those losses to bad teams, teams at the bottom of the standings, expansion teams. But turned it on the rest of the way, and, you know, that's an important win.
It's an important win, and, you know, they went through a 4-game losing streak with a point thrown in there against Boston, and now you've responded with 3 wins in a row. They'll take on Edmonton coming up on Thursday. But, I mean, this is really exactly how you want to respond to, you know, your first real skid of the season. Come out, win 3 more in a row, and start piling those points back up. Now, they've moved back into second in the Central Division. They've played 2 more games than St. Louis has. So, I mean, it's tough to really draw too much away from that right now, but you just collect as many points as possible this time of year.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, look, I mean, Colorado, how many in a row have they won since they lost here? A lot.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, I mean, Colorado is going to end up number one in the West by a, I think, by a safe margin.
Yeah.
And that should surprise no one. You know, they had their little rough spot early in the year, but like they're gonna be that team. So I think the division. I mean, Colorado's, you know, they're 29-8-3. They got four games in hand on the Preds with a 4-point lead. But the Preds, Blues, Wild battle there for, you know, for position. For obviously you want to be the two. You get to host that for, you know, get to have the home ice advantage in the first round. That's gonna be, I think, probably a really good race. And of course, the Wild, by the way, have six games in hand on the Preds, four points back.
Yes, and they're going to be right there. So the thing you feel good about is for the rest of your division and really the rest of the conference, you've got, you know, Dallas has played 40 games, so they've played four less games, but you also have an 11-point lead on them. So you're feeling okay about that. Now, Calgary has only played 37 games.
My God.
Predators have played 44. So, you know, obviously with COVID and the Canadian border stuff and all that stuff, it's a little bit different for Calgary and Edmonton and all these teams. But Preds are in a good spot right now. Just keep winning, and we'll see if they can do it coming up on Thursday against Connor McDavid and the Edmonton Oilers. When we come back, we will get into the Titans. What does the future look like for Julio Jones with this team? We'll get into that coming up next. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, brought to you by Volunteer State Bank, conveniently serving Middle Tennessee with 13 locations. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender. We are streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook. Our video streaming brought to you by the law offices of Amanda Gentry. We are live from the Hillside Medical Game Studio, taking your thoughts on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. Joe Rexroad, it's been a lot of talk this week about the future of the Titans, and we'll get to more of that specifically at the quarterback position coming up later in the show. Jared Stillman will be joining us at 8 o'clock, who Rexroad has labeled in the grid Titans assistant GM, which I'm just now seeing, which makes me very happy that you've done that. That was well done.
I mean, if he doesn't get that job this week, I don't know what that organization is doing.
What do we think the outpouring of effect would be if that happened?
What's that?
What do we think the outpouring effect would be if that was a thing?
I mean, I think Nashville would be completely over the loss to Cincinnati and would rejoice. Yeah. Am I wrong? Am I reading the room wrong?
No, man. I think they'd be ready to go Super Bowl or bust. I mean, get him in there.
The firings that would happen daily would be amazing.
It would be just incredible.
You're fired.
We'll get Jared's thoughts on the quarterback situation coming up at 8 o'clock. Take all your thoughts as well on Ryan Tannehill at the 8 o'clock hour as well. What about Julio Jones? There's, as we know, a lot of decisions to make this offseason, lots of tough decisions if you're John Robinson. You've just given up a second-round pick to acquire Julio Jones. I think everybody would agree that the price you gave up for Julio Jones and the production that we saw this year don't match up. It was not a good trade so far to this point. Now, I will say, had a good game against Houston, and when they threw him the ball, for the most part, had a pretty good game against Cincinnati in the playoff game as well. So, you know, maybe if you're a Titans fan, there's a small glimmer of hope based on the way he closed out the season in the last two games. But I guess, Joe, how do you evaluate the Julio Jones situation right now, and what do you think his future looks like? Is it with the Titans for sure next year? How do you think this plays out for Julio Jones?
Yeah, he's one of the most interesting cases, I think, of all the decisions. I mean, there's just so much to it. Because certainly it was not what you want. Now, if you basically go, what do you have, 6 for 60 or so? Like the last two games, did he have six catches in the last game too? I want to say it's like 6 for 58 and a touchdown, something like that.
I think it was 5 in the Houston game, but yeah.
Okay. So if you took his last two games and that was what you – now, that still is not what you signed up for, okay? But if that's what you – if you had him available, here's a big key. And, 5 for 58 and a touchdown, 6 for 62 – if that's what you could get out of him on a on a consistent basis, I mean, what does that average out to in a year? I mean, that's still, again, it's not Julio numbers. It's not what you signed up for. It might be enough to decide to keep him, though. You know, that's, I mean, I think you're stretching it if you say, hey, off season, get healthier, get all past that stuff, and you're back to being Julio Jones. I didn't see a whole lot of that this year. I mean, really, like, you know, he did get open deep at Houston. He did have the huge game at Seattle. And other than that, like, there wasn't a lot. It was more, you know, a good receiver for sure. A good two? Yeah. I mean, what was Julio Jones the last two games? Compare that to, like, the skill set that Corey Davis brought to you.
Yeah.
Well, how would you compare it?
I think it's similar, but again, to your point, it's also not what you paid for and not what you traded for. So I think if you're out there and you're saying, okay, well, Julio looked pretty good the last couple of games, that's encouraging to me heading into next season. I understand it, but also, like, at this point in Julio's career, especially based on the way the last couple of years have gone, like, if you're expecting him to get through the next season healthy, like, I can't get there with you. I just can't. Like, there is zero expectation to me that he gets through next season healthy. Now, that doesn't mean that he absolutely won't. And maybe the hamstring issues are just behind him now, and he's going to go out there and he's going to be available. But based on his age, how much football he's played, and the way the last 2 years have gone from him, like, to me, if I'm John Robinson, the Titans, I cannot expect that he's going to be healthy all season long next year. I just can't. I can't get there.
No, I mean, that's fair. I mean, you have to take that into account. Like, okay, so you're probably not going to get, you know, like a full season. I mean, basically, you know, I go by the numbers. You know, I mean, his cap number next year is 14.3. I mean, you know, that's a big number. I mean, that's a big number. For what he appears to be bringing, if you cut him after June 1st. Your dead money is 4.8. So you eat basically about a third of that and you save, you know, two thirds of it. I mean, you don't want to eat $5 million. You know, that's not ideal. I mean, that's the question. Is it worth eating? Is it more beneficial to eat $5 million and not have him, or pay $14 million and have him? I mean, again, you're still talking about extra space of $9.5 million if you cut him. But then my next question is, okay, how's your receiving core look next year?
Yeah, no, that's the thing. And obviously, with the way your quarterback just played, I think this complicates it even more, because, you know, Charles Robinson talked about this yesterday. You know, Vrabel said it in his press conference. You need to be great around him. And if it's AJ Brown and then everyone else, and you don't have a threat at number two wide receiver, like, how do you expect to be great around Ryan Tannehill in the passing game? Now, again, you know, I don't know that that totally justifies keeping Julio Jones around. Maybe it's as simple as you got to spend a first-round pick this year on a wide receiver. I don't know. Like, I don't know what you do in that area, and I don't want to
get into –
You're
already drafting a QB, man.
I know. Yeah, you got to trade up and trade all your future assets for QB in the first round, wide receiver in the second round. That's your draft next year.
Well, but you don't have a second-round pick.
I know. You got to trade up all your future assets to get one.
Okay, I got you. Yeah. I got you. Yep.
But it's one of the, like, you know, I don't know that it necessarily means Julio Jones is back next year, but if the alternative is you don't have Julio Jones and I guess you're relying on a receiver at some point that you get in the draft to be your number two guy, I don't know if that's a comfortable spot to be in with Ryan Tannehill as your quarterback.
Yeah, so – I mean, I think he's one of the toughest calls just because of the numbers. And, you know, they went out, they got Josh Reynolds last year. That turned out to obviously not be a fit. And, you know, there was some bad luck in there, too. I mean, Westbrook Akeen is a guy who, hey, it's a heck of a find. You want him down the, you know, you want him down the depth chart a bit. I mean, that's just, like, I think he's going to be part of their plans. He's going to be on the field. But, yeah, you need – I mean, look, we've been talking for years now about – and this wasn't even Julio even coming in, but just like the absolute speed guy. I mean, everybody wants Tyreek Hill. There's one Tyreek Hill. Like, there's one guy in the league who can do what he did, where he basically just blazes a path around an entire defense, you know, for, I mean, so you're not going to get that guy, but someone in that mold, just someone who can vertically really test a defense and you know, just the speed element. They don't have great speed. Now, A.J. Brown has everything. So,
yeah.
I mean, he can do everything. But it's also another question. Okay, is it important to have, you know, the – I mean, we talked about this last year on the draft. Do they care about having a real slot guy? I mean, they went and signed Humphreys, which was a signing that said yes, but then, you know, that didn't work out, mostly because of injuries. I feel like the big outside receiver is more the preference here because of the way their offense works. They need receivers to block. But I mean, I guess I would lean toward – I'd go another year with Julio Jones. I'd lean toward that, but I say that without – going through every single number at this point and saying, okay, here's where you're, you know, and I'm going to actually do this today. Try to crunch these numbers, which again, you can manipulate the numbers to some sure. extent, and they will. But if you just go straight up and you're going through all the numbers, you know, if it's like Julio Jones or, you know, Jackrabbit Jenkins, Julio Jones or Roger Saffold. And it may just be, no, actually, you need to cut all those guys. But, I don't, you know, you can also go the pay cut route. There's a lot of different ways you can go. I would lean toward if you can keep him, I'd keep him because it's still a pretty good number two and could be better than that. And how much does it factor in that you gave up a second-round pick for him, so you really want to try to see it through?
Yeah, I mean, that's going to be something John Robinson has to figure out. And the other part of that is, like, you know, the $4.8 million for dead money, like that's not an insignificant amount of money that you'd be paying him to, you know, not play for your football team. Now, if you could save, and what was that, post June 1st when you would cut him at that point, that it's $4.8 million?
Yeah, I mean, pre June 1st, it's $13.2 million. No, I mean, yeah,
they're not doing that.
No.
So I say that to say, you know, it really, to me, depends on what's your other option if you're John Robinson, because there's no scenario to me where you can just say, all right, we're going to cut Julio Jones after June 1st, and we're rolling into next season with A.J. Brown, Chester Rogers, and Marcus Johnson and Nick Westbrook-Ikhine. Like, you can't do that if you're the Titans, and they won't do that. At least I don't think so.
Yeah, I think somewhere in the draft they're going to get a receiver. But, again, they did that last year. And, you know, in fact, they drafted two receivers last year. I mean, some of this is you look at that and say, okay. I mean, internally it's like, okay, what can Des Fitzpatrick become? Okay, what can Racy McMath become? I don't think we've seen it on the outside. I don't think we've seen enough to feel like they're going to take this big leap. It's possible.
We did hear last year at training camp that Racy McMath was kind of like Julio Jones, so maybe
kinda,
you have that.
He's kind of like him now. Maybe that's what he meant.
Maybe so.
But, you know, I mean, Racy McMath is he is intriguing.
Yeah.
But how can you count on that? I mean, you know, at the same time, I think more now in today's NFL, because the college and NFL offenses are more aligned than they were, like, you see more rookie receivers come right in and do well, but it's still a tough ask. It's hard to count on that.
Go to thegamenashville.com/deals to check out Nashville's best deals. The new deal this week, half off a $25 gift card to Hard Rock Cafe, home of one of the best music scenes in the country. There's no better place for great food, a vibrant atmosphere, and most importantly, a love of music. To keep in tune with the good times tradition that Nashville is known for, as Hard Rock Cafe hosts live band karaoke every single Thursday night. Visit hardrockcafe.com for all upcoming events and head to thegamenashville.com/deals to check out Nashville's best deals. We'll be right back. Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, brought to you by Volunteer State Bank, conveniently serving Middle Tennessee with 13 locations. Member FDIC, equal housing lender. Talking Julio Jones and his future with the Titans. Taking your thoughts on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. Tyler from Berry Hill texting in says, so if you can't cut Julio until June 1st, does that affect who you can sign in free agency? Or can you sign a new receiver that takes you over the cap and then cut Julio after June 1st to get under the cap? This coming from Tyler from Berry Hill on the text line.
Yeah, that's a good question on the timing of cap compliance. There's, you know, I'll try to look that up. I don't have the answer exactly on that, but it does certainly in general, like, it complicates things. You know, I mean, that's why that date's there. I mean, teams don't like to, like, if that's your plan, and it sometimes it is the plan because it's just like you have to do it that way. Yeah. Obviously, like, as you go through free agency, you go through the draft and everything like that, like, you have that in mind, but usually you want to, you know, you want to have your roster managed and in order so those moves make sense prior to that.
Exactly. So, you know, it's not a great spot to be in. Like, I know there are probably some Titans fans listening say, oh, good, well, you can just cut Julio Jones after June 1st. It's not a terrific spot to be in if you're the Titans. And, look, I don't know if that's their plan or not. You know, the Titans internally could be looking around saying, yeah, well, we feel better about Julio Jones being healthier next year, and he'll be a bigger factor in the offense, and the offense can finally be, you know, what people expected to be, what we all expected to be heading into this season. I just, you know, I can't predict the future, obviously, and I have no idea whether or not Julio Jones is going to be hurt next year, whether it's a hamstring or otherwise. I just don't know how, if you're the Titans, you could feel good about that situation with him being another year older coming into the building next year. I just couldn't do it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's also, from all I can gather, you know, all the stuff from Atlanta about Julio Jones really didn't materialize here at all. I don't think there was any issues like that. Now, there were some sort of suggestions. You know, I don't know. Maybe the treatment. Was he not in for treatment enough? I mean, that was kind of what was specifically asked by Kaharski of Vrabel, because there were some kind of references to it in general. So I don't know if, like, you know, that's a thing. But as far as, like, the bigger stuff of, you know, I mean, Julio and Atlanta, clearly that was a management thing. Right, and maybe it trickled over to the coaching staff or whatever, but by all accounts, it went well here that way, which I think is important. I mean, that's important for next year. You know, like, I think he and A.J. Brown have a good relationship. He and Tannehill have a good relationship. It is important when you're going through the decision of, you know, of keeping him or not.
So was he not on the field for the play where Tannehill throws the interception to Nick Westbrook-Ikhina? Is that right?
I think that is correct. I think that is correct.
Is that not a problem? Like, why was he not on the field and maybe the biggest third down of the year?
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's – yeah, you could look at it that way. But, I mean, they have different personnel groupings, you know, for different plays. So I don't know if it was like they ran a few and then he tapped out, or it's just that particular play, he's just not in the group. You know, I mean, I hear what you're saying, but it's not like he just, like, missed that drive.
I know, but, like, and it doesn't change, like, Tannehill, they don't throw the ball to the other team. I understand that. So I'm not trying to pin the last play on Julio Jones or anything. It's just, I guess you would hope in those situations where you're in crunch time in a playoff game, like, you would want your best players to be on the field as often as possible. Now, look, maybe he was just, I don't know, gassed from the couple of plays before. Or to your point, maybe it was a personnel package. I don't know. But I think I'll take my chances with AJ and Julio on the field in big-time situations like that. That's just me.
Yeah, I'm looking at it now. It was Brown, Westbrook, Ikhina, and Rodgers. So, you know, Rodgers as the Rodgers as the, you know, outside receiver on the right, which, you know, that would be, I guess, normally the spot for Julio. So, yeah, so I don't know. I don't know, again, if that's probably just a, okay, Julio took a blow. I think he was on that drive. So, I mean, maybe that's it. I mean, I know that there was all the stuff. Well, and we, you know, Jared is someone who talked about, like, the not going out for a trick play that was for him in Atlanta, and that made everybody mad. I saw, if anything, this year, there was a game where it looked to me like he was asking to go back in, and they were like, let's ease up because of the hamstring, you know? So
I think that was Kansas City, yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, I don't think it's like he's like, nah, I don't care, whatever.
Go back to the text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Joe from Maryland texting in says, I saw a mock draft from ESPN that had us taking a linebacker in the first round. And after our pick, they had Malik Willis, Jamison Williams, and the Penn State wide receiver going to other teams. If we get any of those three, that would be really good. I don't necessarily want to get into a mock draft discussion on January the 26th.
It's that time. Point.
We will have way too much time to do that. But I will say, without devolving into a mock draft discussion, what they do with their first round pick is going to be pretty interesting. Keeping in mind that they, at the moment, don't have a second round pick. What the Titans choose to do with their first round pick is pretty intriguing to me.
Yeah. I mean, it's a pretty important pick. It always is anyway. But when the first round picks the last 2 years have gone the way they've gone, again, we'll see what last year's first round pick becomes. But when you don't get any sort of impact on your football team for the last two first-round picks, and then you traded this second-round pick, this first-round pick, seems like someone that you really want to help your team. I've got to think, God, we're gonna talk about these mock drafts for so long. But I've got to think, I mean, receiver or tight end, but is there a tight end that even fits that? I don't even know that there's really a tight end, you know, that would be worth that pick. But then, you know, you could also
They're going back to the offensive line, baby.
Well, maybe. That could be too. Well, I mean, I'm trying to think. I had my like predictions for the, you know, I do like sports predictions for the year at The Athletic. And I predicted that they're gonna that the Linderbaum kid from Iowa is somehow gonna plummet the draft. I don't know why he would. He'll probably won't be there at all. But if he is, that the Titans take him, and now they have their center of the future.
I got a text that says Ryan Tannehill has been radio silent since Saturday's game. I don't know why, but I feel like either a player or someone said something about him in his game that day that he didn't take very well. Call me whatever, but usually Ryan does post something after games. I would especially think that had to be true after this one. In his post-game interview, something about it just hit different. I cannot confirm or deny any of this. Just pure speculation. I mean, he just lost the playoff game, and I think if he's honest with himself, he knows that the majority of it was his fault. I don't know that he'll be posting anything on social media anytime soon.
Yeah, that's like, yeah, I mean, what do you say? And look, to me, again, we've talked about it already, but I thought that in the post game was a opportunity for him to take the blame, and he should have, and he didn't, and then he didn't talk on cleanout day, which to me is disappointing. But as far as him being on social media, I wouldn't anticipate that. By the way, Daniel Jeremiah's mock draft, we can go through all of them today if you like.
Please do.
Yes. He's got the Bengals getting Linderbaum at 29. Now, Linderbaum is, I mean, now I think the Titans, I think Ben Jones should be a priority. I mean, I think he's a good player. He's important. And maybe this may be the mock draft that was just referenced on the text line. But, yeah, how about what if the Chiefs get Jamison Williams, like the fastest guy in the whole draft? Of course they would.
It would be a very Kansas City thing to do.
Yeah, but this has the Titans taking Quay Walker, another Georgia linebacker. That's no. No.
I don't think that's happening.
Joe the GM.
That's just my guess.
Well, I mean, I'm just saying, like, I'm just counting linebackers, you know?
Yeah. yeah, I'd be surprised on that front. When we come back, we'll get into a hot-button topic right now in the NFL. Should the NFL change up the overtime rules after what we saw the other night in the Kansas City-Buffalo game? We'll get into that coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
And the Buffalo Bills was unbelievable. There was like three touchdowns in 52 seconds. It was absolutely incredible. It then went into overtime.
Yeah.
Right? They toss a coin. The Chiefs got the ball. they scored a touchdown, game over. And yeah. I was like, that's not fair.
No.
It just isn't fair. It's inherently unfair. They should just play for 15 minutes. And if it's still tied at 15 minutes, play for another 15 minutes.
Yeah.
Because otherwise the entire game is just chosen on a coin toss.
Right.
So why not just do that anyway?
You can...
You don't need all the stuff. You don't need people getting concussion and all these things. Just be like, hey, you're going to the Super Bowl. Like, just do that. The game between the Chiefs.
That was James Corden talking about the overtime rules in the NFL. It's gotten everywhere, Rex Road. I've seen it all over ESPN this week. It's been on the NFL Network. Now drifting into the mainstream media as well that has nothing to do with sports. The NFL overtime conversation of should the NFL change its overtime rules? Obviously, we talked about it on Monday. Just an incredible game between the Bills and the Chiefs on Sunday night. One of the best football games, maybe the best football game that I have watched at the NFL level. It was awesome from start to finish in that game from Buffalo and Kansas City. As we know, Kansas City ties up the game. Has 13 seconds left on the clock. They drive down the field, tie up the game, go to overtime. They win the toss. And Patrick Mahomes and company go right down the field. Josh Allen never touches the ball in overtime. And the game's over. Kansas City's going to the AFC title game without ever having seen Josh Allen have the ball in overtime. Rex Road, there's a lot of clamoring this week to change the NFL overtime rules. Where do you come down on this? What's your position on how the NFL should handle overtime, particularly in the playoffs?
This is another one of those two things being true, okay? Would I like the NFL to change its overtime rules? Yeah, we've talked about this before. I think the NFL should do what college football does because I love those rules, and then both teams get the ball. I think it's a great – now, again, I'm talking 25-yard line, see what you can do.
You want a two-point conversion competition?
No, I don't. And I honestly hope college football rethinks that. It's going to all twos that early. Or really at all. Just going to having to do a two-point conversion after every touchdown with the second overtime on, to me, you're very rarely going to get 6-7 overtimes. So, anyway, yes, I think the NFL should change to that. But this idea that it's just decided by a coin toss, no. You know what it's decided by? By the Bills not being able to stop the freaking Chiefs. The freaking Chiefs. I mean, I'm sorry that the coin toss gives them the ball, but like that doesn't mean, okay, thanks, go home, everybody. They won the coin toss. No, they made plays to go down the field, and they changed the rules. I mean, it used to be forever. It was sudden death, and then the coin flip really decided it because all you had to do was get the ball, get a field goal, get 40 yards, and you win the game. Now you have to score a touchdown, or the other team gets the ball, which is better. Would I like them to change it? Sure. But – the whining this week is just disregarding the fact that the Bills are certainly welcome to get a stop at some point.
Yeah, well, you had the lead with 13 seconds left.
Well, there's that, too.
You chose to kick the ball through the back of the end zone, and then you let him go 50 yards in 13 seconds to kick a field goal. I mean, that is part of this conversation as well, that you totally screwed that part of it up. Now, look, I think the NFL has already – fixed my major issue with the overtime, and that's exactly what you brought up. Like in the old days of, all right, you win the toss and you could go down there and just kick a 50-yard field goal and win. Like to me, that was stupid. Like if you score a touchdown, that's fine. But if you win on a field goal on the first possession without the other team ever having touched the ball, I thought that was bad.
Well, there were never touchdowns, by the way. There were never touchdowns.
Never
because you just played for the field goal, right?
Exactly. So. I'm totally cool with that part of it. I think they fixed the big issue. Would I like to see them go to the college way of doing things where you start at the 25 and you just go from there? Yeah, I guess. But then it turns into, I mean, you've got the argument of that's too gimmicky and all this other stuff. You know, I love it personally. I like the way that college football overtime is set up. But I understand why people wouldn't like it that way. So I actually really don't have much of a problem with the way the overtime rules are set up right now in the NFL. Like, at some point, you have to be rewarded for your defense. Like, there's so much about offense now. Like, getting a stop and holding Patrick Mahomes to a field goal in that situation, you get the ball back, and then your quarterback has a chance to go down the field and win the game. Like, at some point, defense has to be a part of the equation. It can't just be, well, just let them keep trading chances back and forth forever, going all the way down the field. Like, you have to encourage getting a stop at some point, right?
Well, exactly. And honestly, if you don't, if you think, I mean, that's fine. If you want to call that gimmicky, if you don't want this to be gimmicky, then actually James Corden's right. 15 minutes. I mean, do it like soccer. You know, extra time. Here you go. Here's another chunk of time to play, and then see what happens at the end of it. I mean, that's the least gimmicky way you could do it. But obviously, yeah. I don't think we're going to see
that. Players left.
Well, right. I mean, I don't think we're going to see that. There's the NFL has prioritized these games are going to stay in a 3-hour window. Obviously, you go overtime, it's going to go over that. But they're not going to do things that. That make for longer games. But that's the most just real way to do it is just, here you go, play an entire period of football, an entire quarter of football. I guess it would then now be a fifth of football. Play a fifth and see what happens.
Wayne from Spring Hill texting in on the text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, says, if the Bills squib the kickoff, do they win? Maybe. I mean, they could. Kansas City could also return the kickoff to the, 35-yard line on the other side of the field, too. I don't know. And as Johnny on Twitter points it out, with a GIF attached of the Music City Miracle to it, says, can I just say for the record, considering their history, do you think the Bills could ever learn to squib kick when there is a small amount of time on the clock and not kick the ball away based on what happened on that play? So that is a good point brought up by Johnny.
It is, but actually, if that's your point, then that kind of explains why they did what they did, right?
That's what I'm saying.
Because, okay, I guess I took that as if they would have squibbed it, but kicking deep, the reason they kicked out of the end zone is to not have the return that kills them.
Right.
So, look, if they squibbed it, they probably win because it probably touches someone and a few more seconds go off and they don't. But sometimes you squib it and you go a little too low. And you hit someone in the helmet, and then boom, they fall on the ball, and like 1 second has gone off. I mean, there's things that can go wrong with squibs too. When they kicked it out of the back of the end zone, to me, at the moment, I was like, I mean, I was very interested to see what they're going to do. When they did it, I said, I mean, it's 13 seconds.
That's the thing. Like, you just, the first play, like, you're so scared of getting beat deep that you basically gave Tyreek Hill like a free 25 yards on that play. And I understand why, like, you don't want him to torch you down the field. But the second play was the one that was just mystifying to me. Like, there wasn't anybody in the frame with Travis Kelce. I was like, y'all not think he might get the ball in that situation? It's unbelievable to me.
I agree. And I was talking to TD about that, and he's like, they had him in conflict with, because of this on the other side. I'm like, I get it, but it's Kelce. it's Hill and Kelce. And then if Pringle destroys you, then okay, Pringle destroys you. But the amount of space that he had on just a little move and in cut was like, oh my gosh, it was just amazing.
Jeff in Kingston Springs texting in says the Bills screwed up, no doubt, but the Chiefs weren't stopping the Bills' offense either. Does the fact that since 2010, the team that has won the coin toss has won 10 of the 11 overtime playoff games sway your opinion? This is coming from Jeff in Kingston Springs. It's a good question.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's not perfect. So I guess I'm just bothered by this whole, just a coin flip and that's all that decides it. No, they're still playing football. You are absolutely welcome to go out and get a stop.
By the way, Bills defense, technically, I know – it's hard to believe this after the other night. Technically, was the number one defense in football.
It was. Number one D.
Just throwing that out there.
I think Charles Robinson was right the other day. Like Tyreek Hill broke their defense.
Yeah.
Like, they actually were playing really well, and Tyreek Hill broke them.
Did you think there was any chance he might get called for a taunting penalty as he's giving the guy the peace sign? I think it was Matt Milano, and Milano was like 4 yards in front of him.
I'm so glad.
Those videos are incredible. He's like, peace.
I mean, I'm so glad he didn't. That was incredible, man.
Look, I'm glad he didn't either, but could you imagine the firestorm that we'd be talking about today if there was a taunting penalty on that play?
It took that back. Wait, I'm trying to think. I know in college you can take those back for that. You can't do that in the NFL, can you? It'd be after.
After?
It would just be assessed afterward, so. And you know what? It would have been worth it.
Hey, maybe the Bills wish they would have got the taunting penalty. That would have kicked them back a little bit. And maybe instead of 13 seconds left after they scored their touchdown, there would have been like 8. Could have worked.
Yeah, there you go. that gets into the whole, like, you know, does one thing change how everything is played from there? Like the Titans taking the extra point in the first half. Is the game played exactly the same from there? So they have a one-point lead later, or is everything totally different?
Or if they win the coin toss, and right at the beginning of their game. I mean, you can what-if anything, so. Right?
Yeah.
That is true.
That is true. When we come back, we'll get back into the Titans and ask the question that I've been pondering all week. Is the window to win closed for this Titans team? We'll get into that coming up next. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.